Walter Martin is a multi-instrumentalist, singer and songwriter from Washington, D.C. He has been a driving force in the critically acclaimed bands Jonathan Fireeater and The Walkmen. He's released 4 solo albums and has a song on the soundtrack of the upcoming animated movie The Missing Link. We had the pleasure of sitting down with him to discuss his influences, band history, and his writing style.
Hey, hello, Walter.
Hey there, how you doing?
Doing fantastic. Hey, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it, man.
No problem.
I know you're a Beatles fan. Do you have a favorite Beatles song or album?
I mean, I'm a real John guy, you know, so I like... I get kind of hardcore about it. Like, I get kind of black and white about it. I mean, I like the Paul song, but I'm very much a John guy. So I like I'm the Walrus and Strawberry Fields and Across the Universe. I like the John songs. I struggle sometimes with the Paul stuff. So my favorite record is probably the Magical Mystery Tour maybe, or whatever, Beatles 65, the one with No Reply on it. But, you know, they're always a little spotty because of the Dan Paul songs.
Yeah, I'm more of a John guy myself. I totally understand what you're saying. So you're in New York, but I knew, you know, what was life like growing up in D.C., and how did you get into music?
I was like a serious like baseball player guy entire life until I was about 12, and then... and then Stewart, who was the singer for Jonathan Fireeater, moved from South Carolina to D.C., and he and I became friends very quickly, and we started just playing music. We took guitar lessons together and started getting into music, and started a band, when we were in fifth grade, so when we were, 12, and so I quickly lost interest in baseball and started doing music with Stu all the time, and then... in seventh grade, Matt joined the band, who's the drummer in Fireeater and the Walkmen, who's still my best friend. And, we just always had a band. We just played at all the school dances and then somehow got into playing it when we were in ninth grade, we got into playing at the nightclub, the 9:30 club and stuff like that. Cause we were kind of we could play pretty decently and we looked like we were about 5 years old. So I think it was sort of a fun novelty for people. We played ska. We were really into the Specials. We wore pork pie hats and checkered socks and Doc Martin loafers and stuff like that. And played pretty competent ska for guys who looked like they were about 7. So yeah, we started playing at all these nightclubs and then, that was how it all started. And Paul joined us. Paul, who's a guitar player in Walkmen, joined us, in ninth grade. And the band got a little more, he sort of brought some sophistication, musical sophistication, I would say, to the band.
So you started with guitar, obviously, and you branched out. Obviously, you're multi-instrumentalist. I mean, we get to your solo stuff in a bit, but you went from guitar, and then what was your next instrument? How did you, or did you just sort of jump to all of them?
I played guitar, and then, then I started playing drums, actually, I remember Matt Derrick and I, flipped a coin, or I forgot, Drew Strong, something, to see who's going to be the drummer and who was going to be the guitar player. And he ended up being the drummer, and I think we both wanted to be the guitar player, but then I started playing keyboards. Paul joined the band, I started playing more keyboards. But when you're in a band for that long, that's all you do. I mean, I wasn't doing a lot of homework, so all I did was play music. So you sort of figure out how to play all the instruments. So after doing it for a long time, you kind of can play all the rock instruments,
Now, were you always writing lyrics? I know you're obviously, you helped your co-writer with the Walkmen and obviously your solo material. Were you always writing or did that sort of happen later post Jonathan Fireeater?
I was always writing music, yeah. I mean, I remember in seventh grade, we had we played it, me and Matt and Stu played it, we have actually a video of it, played at a high school assembly and played not a high school assembly, a middle school assembly. We played God Save the Queen and... I guess one other cover, and then we played 2 instrumental ska originals that I had written. I still remember us sitting when I wrote the riff, and I still remember both the riffs and the songs very well.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing you mentioned ska, and I'm curious to hear some of your other influences, but it's interesting, you mentioned that the Beatles, right, and you're a John guy. It's interesting when you hear the Beatles solo stuff, you can kind of hear that was Paul's influence, and there's George's. It's interesting to hear going from Jonathan Fireeater to the Walkmen and then to your solo material. It's interesting to hear sort of Walter's mind, what I mean? Could you elaborate about that as far as what are you looking back, what do you think contributed to the Jonathan Fireeater experience and the Walkmen experience that was Walter?
Well, I think that I honestly think that the ska stuff, the fact that me and Matt and Paul and Stu were all playing ska when we were that age, it's such a rhythmic music, and there's such an accent that that offbeat that is the key to ska is, it really makes the groove kind of, the groove has to be kind of hot in order for a song to work. So I think we kind of got addicted to that and to making sure we had a really hot little groove. I think it gives you good rhythm to play ska because you're playing sort of slightly backwards from how you usually play. And I honestly think that that played a part in us. I mean, I don't want to like boast about our bands, but like, I think we always had pretty good beats, you know, we had a good groove. And I think recently I've been like, you know, I bet that's because we played so much ska when we were kids. But yeah, as far as like how we, you know, with, like our tastes just transitioned. We went through our ska period when we were very young. And then like the transition and out into like bad periods, like where we played like funk, like in 10th grade, 11th grade, we're playing like sort of this funk hybrid kind of, I don't know what the hell it was, but it was pretty bad. And luckily we got that out of our systems. And then by like senior year in high school, we had discovered real music, you know, like, and not that ska isn't real music, but we had discovered like the Velvet Underground and you know, we were always into classic rock, but like Velvet Underground hit us very hard. And like, suddenly we were like, oh my God, this is it. We could just really relate to it. It was kind of like, it just felt like natural to us and we could play it pretty well, you know, and it just sort of suited our personalities, I think. So we got really into that, you know, and I think I was thinking, even though Fire Eater really didn't sound like the Velvet Underground at all, we were very inspired by that, their tone, I guess, of their stuff.
In every car that passes me on the street, I search for the particular face.
Well, let's talk about some of your solo stuff, you know. I want to go through sort of album by album. I know on a recent interview, you mentioned about you were playing some songs you were working on and your wife was like, wow, this is very interesting. I think that was for We're All Young Together. What was the inspiration for that? It has a very playful and inclusive vibe.
Butterflies, they fill my guts when I look in your eyes. A heart that's young is filled with sweet surprise. Only the innocent can sympathize.
I don't care about. I just, you know, it was like, I think I just wanted to do the opposite of what I'd always done before. So I was drawn to things that didn't have anything in common with the Walkman, really, especially the Walkman, just because I've been doing that for the last, like, whatever, 12 years. And I really needed to figure out, you know, I really wanted to figure out how I could, you know, I never imagined during Walkman that I would, you know, because I'm a pretty shitty singer. I'm not like a singer kind of person. And so I really wanted to figure out a way to be self-sufficient, kind of, you know? And I was like, you know, I do like a lot of singers who are shitty singers, you know, and I think a lot of the way that they make it work is by just kind of being themselves and being funny and like human and approachable and just like, you know, where you're listening to the words, you're not listening to like the way the person's crooning or whatever. So I knew that it had to be all lyric. The lyrics had to be the whole thing. And that it had to be sort of, you know, very, very me, like no unfiltered me. So I just started writing stuff like that, you know. I just started writing whatever the hell came to my mind. And, you know, I'm a big, like, 50s rock person, like the Coasters, that kind of music. I'm, like, obsessed with it. I mean, I'm obsessed with most kinds of music, but that stuff, I feel like I'm obsessed more than most people are with that stuff. So I felt like, I feel very comfortable and like I really have my head around that kind of music. So I started writing stuff like that, you know, and it felt very me. And I played it for my wife and she was like, wow, that's you. That's very you. And I played it for my mom and she was like, cried. She was like, oh my God, it's Walter. So I was like, yeah, it just felt right. So I didn't really think about it too hard. I didn't have any commercial ambitions or anything. I was just like, It was a very, it was a great, it was like a lifesaver for me, actually, looking back at it. I don't really actually know what motivated it entirely, but I'm so glad I did it. It was very much just like a pure expression of self is what I think of. And that was it. And so and thankfully, like, I have no idea why, but it does sort of, it has sort of connected and gotten me, you know, I feel like I have a pretty stable thing happening now, which is kind of a fucking miracle. So it's, I'm thankful for that record and whatever impulse in me helped me make that record.
Well, the feeling of the record, you know, it really, and we can talk about it in a few minutes, but obviously it maybe opened doors for your, you know, your song that's going to be in a major animated movie, the song Do Dilly Do, A Friend Like You.
That river flows. Yeah, all I see that's guiding me is the fuzz on the end of my nose. Oh, but I believe in destiny or whatever it is that brought a friend like you.
Do you feel there's sort of opened the door to that in a way? Like, did someone hear that and spark an interest and say, wow, I think this guy can contribute to this album or for this soundtrack?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's funny because I didn't mean for it to be kids' music when I made the record. I just kind of made a funny record. And then halfway through it, I was like, you know, maybe I'll call this a kids' record and it'll be, I'll be declaring that I'm not even competing with any indie rock. I'm just doing my own thing, and it's, there's something also sort of very embarrassing about that label that I was like I'm into this. I want to be as profoundly uncool as possible. So yeah, it ended up being like a kid's record. I made like a cartoony cover or whatever, and it was kind of like a declaration of independence for me. But yeah, I think that the fact that it was like that, I think made people listen, or at least made music supervisor people seem to pay attention to it, you know, the people who do pick out music for commercials and movies and things like that. So I got it helped me get traction in that world. So now I have, you know, a bunch of relationships with music supervisors who do commercial stuff and film stuff. And so it's great. It keeps me very busy doing all that stuff. And yeah, that Missing Link film thing was a great thing because they're such a great company and let me do whatever the hell I wanted, basically.
But yeah, totally. Well, we're excited for it, and it's delightful to hear your music and kind of the reach. That's really powerful. I mean, well, then moving on to 2016's Arts and Leisures, definitely had a variety of sounds. I mean, had some slide guitar, some brass, and I got to say, Down by the Singing Sea is one of my favorite songs, definitely off that album. And I wanted to ask you what's amazing about that song, the chorus, or I guess maybe the pre-chorus, did you write the lyrics first or the music? Because I love how you stretch out the words. And it's really
fascinating. Well, it's funny, yeah. You know, it's funny because that actually was all the lyrics were for, the lyrics had sort of a more typical sort of dopey sound that I was like sort of my default sound. It was like a little country kind of shuffle with those words and a different melody and everything. And then I had the idea for that music that ended up being the music for that song. And I was like, I need words. So I was like, I'm just going to try the Down by the, cause I always liked that phrase, Down by the Singing Sea. So I was like, I'm just going to try it. Yeah, so they're very stretched. So they're supposed to be in a more compact little sort of country shuffle, and the lyrics got totally stretched, which, you know, was sometimes it works great, like, and sometimes it doesn't work at all. But in this case, I thought it was cool to have the sort of comical word, or whatever the hell words they are, stretched over it was worked out great, I thought.
Now, do you find when you write those, is there like a single narrative, or is it sort of, I would almost back to Velvet Underground, like Lou Reed's writing, I would say like not every song was a single song, it's sort of bits and pieces of smaller, multiple stories. Would you say the single narrative with your music, or is it multiple narratives going on?
I mean, I think that I like, you know, with most of my songs, Down by the Singing Sea is one of the exceptions, but with most of my songs, I really want people to know exactly what I'm talking about. I like to be sort of not use metaphor or anything like that, and just to be just tell a straight story, and just to be engaging. So with the first line, you know where what I'm talking about. The second line, you know what I'm talking about. It's just, I like clarity in the lyrics, and just for there to be a very clear story. So yeah, that's what I try to do with. I feel like my song is not done and successful until it has that sort of feeling, and then something lyrically interesting happens, or funny, or something happens lyrically. So the lyrics are really the whole thing. But with songs like Down by the Sea and the Sea, they're less so. You know, I do like having some songs where it's more with a, like that one has like a doubled vocal. You know, the two, it's like two me's singing the whole song. Which I, you know, it makes it harder to understand the words. It's a different sort of vibe, but I do like having those where it's less like hanging on every word kind of song. So I have a couple of those that I'm recording now, actually. And there were some of those on my Arts and Leisure record too. I like sort of feel like sometimes I think it's hard to listen to a record all the way through. And like, if you miss a word and you like get in halfway through the song, you're like, what the hell is this guy talking about? It's nice to be able to casually listen to music sometimes.
Completely understand, yeah. So then the following year, you know, My Kind of Music, very much more storytelling. You begin with a poem on the wishing well.
I threw a penny in the wishing well, and I made a wish as the penny fell. And I wished for a song, a tune where some words might belong. And I wished for a guitar, too. So I could play,
you know, what inspired that album? Was it a collection of just songs, or were you going more for a threaded narrative there?
I mean, that was a lot of that was like pieces that I had recorded before, and I really wanted to make another kids record, so I had a lot of songs that were sort of unfinished, and so I finished a lot of songs. That one was not that was the least deliberately written record that I've made. It was more sort of a compilation of scraps. I mean, I do really love that record and the things that I worked really hard on, but it's more pieced together. My favorite songs on it are the ones that I wrote specifically for it, which is like that Hey Matt song that I did with Matt Berninger from The National, who's my buddy and who's a really funny dude. But that record sticks out to me as sort of one that I put a little less effort into. Even though when I wrote the song, I was working hard and trying hard. I sort of put it together after the fact.
Well, it certainly doesn't sound like that, you know. But there's some magic there too, right? Sometimes you try too hard, and sometimes there's a magic in like just sort of casually doing it, right?
For sure, that's the thing. You know, I didn't go back and like mix those a lot. I guess I did with some of them, but some of those are just my rough mixes. And I like that song, it's called Where'd You Go, Uncle Joe, which I really love. You know, that was done so casual, and like that's a rough mix, and that's like just, but I think that's one of my favorite ones because it has a very sort of effortless vibe to it.
Or for sure. I mean, I think like back to the Velvets, you know, some of their stuff, like it's less about the quality of the recording and more the spirit of the effort, you know?
Right. Well, I'm definitely in that camp.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the budget for quality recordings. Or the patient.
Yeah. Now, the following album, Reminisce Bar and Grill, that's, you know, obviously, that's an amazing record. I got to say, my favorite track on the album, Ride Down the Avenue, there's many great songs on the album, but that song is just amazing. And I got to say, one of the lines kind of means a lot to me, just for personal losses, personal family losses in my life. If I can ask, what was your inspiration for that line and for that song?
Well, that was just about, like, I don't know. I think, you know, I think a lot of what I do is I write for myself and for, I think of, like, my kids and my grandkids listening to, I'm, you know, it's sort of selfish in a way what I do because I'm trying to just, I don't know, express what it's like to be me right now. And so... When I think of what I'm writing, I do think of, like, my family a lot and about, like, and I think of, you know, whatever. That year, like, my wife's grandmother, she was raised by her grandparents. My wife's grandmother died, and just, like, I think about, you know, you think about the people who have died and that you hope what the work you're doing, you know, is something that is meaningful and that they are approving of. And so, yeah, that's what I meant by that.
And the song "I Can Run Now from the Hellbounds, But I Can't Hide," musically, that's a really interesting song. Obviously, great beat. Maybe it's going back to the ska, but the ska roots. But what's interesting is I don't even know if there's a bridge in that song. I mean, sorry, a chorus. Or the bridge sounds like the chorus, in which is the name of the song. It's an interesting song. Would you sort of describe? I think it's great. How did you write that song, and you know, the structure and composition?
Yeah, that's another one. That was a 6/8 song. Dun 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 cha dun dun dun, like a slow song, and it was just sounding very dreary. But I liked the words a lot, and I liked the sort of darker melody a lot. But slow, the darker melody with like my voice and stuff, it was just kind of like. I was not feeling it. So I was like, let me, I want to put just like a hot beat on it, just to see if I can bring it to life, to bring the chords and words to life, because I like the chords and words a lot. And so I just put a hot beat on it. And then I started liking it. I was like, wow, this is great. It's like sort of a sad song disguised it like a party song. Yeah, that was about the extent of it. Yeah, as far as the structure, yeah, I think it's more structured like a slow song. It doesn't have like a big chorus, really. Yeah, it's sort of like a cycle kind of thing. But yeah, it's just about like going running in the park and fear of death, health.
That's interesting. It's so maybe the going from 6/8 to 4/4 with the hot beat kind of, you know, it's interesting. You wrote it for 6/8 and then it changed the sound of it, I guess.
Yeah, I do that kind of stuff a lot. I mean, with Walkman, I did that too, where I would write just to generate lyrics or to generate, a lot of it is to generate lyrics or to generate chords. I write in sort of a default style, which is like a country shuffle or just sort of a fun, easygoing thing, just to generate words. Because then you're like, okay, it's more easygoing. And I feel like I can write more casual lyrics over that kind of music. If there's like this big, whatever, like throbbing, like rock sound that you're trying to put lyrics on, it's hard because you're like, okay, this music sounds really massive and important. And I need to sing about something like, you know, like the end of the world, something like just like grand theme, which is often a really shitty thing to write about, you know? So I like to write, I try to stay specific, and then to do that I try to write the words with just a teeny little sort of a dorky sound, and then sometimes I will, you know, make the music bigger and cooler after the fact, but sometimes I won't.
Now the Walkman, you know, going from Jonathan Fire Eater, obviously, you know, great band, moving to the Walkman, you know, going from clubs to festivals to playing on Conan O'Brien. I mean, looking back, does it feel like a whirlwind? I mean, what was that experience like, Walter?
Yeah, it's just kind of like, it was a whirlwind. Like, it went by so fast, you know? It was just kind of like, I mean, I remember the day, it was after Fire Eater broke up, Matt and Paul and I, who is the drummer and guitar player, we, you know, the guys who I was talking about, who we played together since we were whatever, like 13, we sort of didn't know what the hell to do. It was like, we wanted to keep doing music. So we built like a recording studio in Upper Manhattan. And I guess our plan was to run it as a business, which is a terrible plan, and to like, you know, record bands, even though we didn't know how to record bands. So that's what we did. But thankfully we, you know, had the idea. My Ham, who's my cousin, is a singer in the Walkman. He, his band was just breaking up. And so the timing worked out great. And we just needed a singer, you know? Ham called me, actually. He was like, why don't I come and play with you guys? And I was like, yeah, that'd be great. So he came. I don't even think he was planning on being, maybe he didn't want to be bold and say that he should be the singer, but it was very clear he should be a singer. So he started singing, and then, you know, the band was sort of formed quickly. But, you know, at that age, we weren't like thinking about like a career or anything. We weren't like, it's very much like, I don't know what, I don't, at least I wasn't. I don't know what the hell I was thinking about. I was just, we were like, very like day to day, like, okay, let's have band practice on Tuesday. And then we had a few songs, and I was like, okay, let's press a record. And then, I don't know, somehow it slowly started working, I guess. There was never, like, a moment where it's like, wow, we're really kicking ass. And it never got to the point where it almost felt like we were kicking ass for a couple periods, but it was never, like, total domination, you know? And so it was a lot of work, you know. It was a lot of touring and a lot of work writing, you know, so much time writing, which is the part that I loved, you know. The rest of it, like, even like touring and recording, I didn't enjoy it very much at the beginning. I guess I did, but it was a long thing. It was the only life I knew, though. So, you know, it's what happened.
So you, obviously, and your cousin Ham, you know, were you both sort of, would you call yourself sort of the principal writers of the Walkman? I mean, I know Peter and Paul, I know they're all right, but were you guys the main writers, or was it a joint collaboration?
Yeah, it was mostly me and Ham and Paul. Paul, the guitar player.
Yep.
Paul, you know, really wrote most of the really beautiful musical ideas. And I would say that most of the songs started with, like, a little guitar riff of his. I mean, not all of them, but I would say on the whole, it would be that. Yeah, Paul would have a guitar part, and then I was always playing drums when we were writing. So, and I would put drums on his guitar part to try to make it rock a little more, and then Ham would put a melody on it, and then Ham and I would put lyrics. Ham and I would write the lyrics, and you know, things would get changed. I mean, that's like very oversimplified version of how he did things, but I think that's how he did like 75% of our songs.
It's interesting looking at your discography, you know, with the Walkman. You know, it feels like You and Me, well, Post, you did the Pussycat Story and the Walkman, it's a cover album, but You and Me, there was sort of a shift. I mean, there still were some roots, but I feel like there was a shift in the writing and composition.
Well, it's back to the battle today. But I definitely,
we were about to sink, you know, after we did 100 Miles Off, which we were kind of trying to, like, do something more. I think we were trying to prove two things with that. We were trying to prove that we weren't, like, like the Rat kind of people, like, just nasty, like, art rock guys. So I think we were trying to prove that we had a sense of humor. So we did songs like Louisiana, and we, like, dressed up like cowboys and stuff like that.
Louisiana, come go away with me.
But at the same time, I think we also wanted to prove that we could really still rock. So we had these sort of pretty bad, like, really, it's hard to beat the Rat as far as rock, you know? So I think we were trying to, and it sounds like we're kind of flailing. So I have very little love for that record. So I do like the Louisiana song, I guess. Another couple. I like that other one with bongos on it, Brandy Alexander.
There's worse ways to see it, baby. Set fire and watch it burning.
But yeah, after that, we're gonna break up. You know, it's like we weren't really feeling it. And then I'm sure it was Paul who, I think he had moved to Philly, started, as he always would, start sending little like 45 second guitar things up to me and Ham. And we'd be like, oh, that's pretty good. And then, you know, then he'd send another and be like, oh, that's pretty good. Maybe we can make a song of this. And the next thing you know, I was going down to Philly like two times a week, and we were working on music, and then we had stuff going, you know, and we really wanted to make that good. That was just like, not that the whole world was paying attention, or very few people were paying attention, but we wanted to prove that we wanted to prove something, that we were good, you know? So we really put a lot of work into that. In my mind, we really switched to 6/8 a lot. I think that was our way of trying to not compete with the Rat. And with our previous, like, rock stuff. So we, like, there's a lot of 6/8 on that. It was more like lyrical and more, I'd say, emotional, whatever, you know, and pretty. I mean, there was still some rock, and there's always some rock in what we did. But I think it was more balanced with being, you know, more romantic and stuff like that. And we were, that's when we really started focusing on lyrics a lot.
So what are your days like today, Walter? I mean, you obviously you're a family man. You have two daughters, I believe?
Two daughters, yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, what are you, music-wise or day-to-day, or, you know, what's your, are you playing every day? What's your go-to instrument, you know, on a day-to-day basis?
I have a studio in Gowanus in Brooklyn, where I go every day, you know, from like whatever. I'm here at 8:15 and I'm here till about 5 every day. So I'm working on, you know, I do a lot of like commercial stuff, and I've been writing for a couple of TV shows too, which has been really fun. And I did a lot of stuff like that. And I'm working on a couple of really fun projects that will come out at some point. And I'm also trying to work on a record of my own, which I just went into the studio with a great band, which I've never done before. I have like a real band recording my songs. So that was like 2 weeks ago. We recorded 8 songs. So I'm going to put out a record probably like in October that I really am thrilled about. I'm just trying to get all this other work stuff out of the way so I can, focus on it.
That's exciting. I know along the years, obviously, you've collaborated with so many musicians and met so many musicians, you know, Karen O, obviously, and you mentioned the National, Matt from the National, and other musicians. I mean, do you have it on your cell phone? You can just call up all these interesting musicians to sort of, hey, can you want to collaborate? Is it, or is it more organic? Or how do you find your band, as you said, that you're working with today?
Well, the band that I'm working with is my friend Josh Kaufman, who's like a producer, even though he's very uncomfortable calling himself a producer. But he is a producer and a brilliant, he's like the best musician I've ever met in my life. He put together this band. They're all musicians. Actually, it's mostly people who play it on that song that I made for that movie. Cause I had a big budget for that movie, which is cool. So I got to hire like my fantasy band. And I have somehow, it's nice that I have a budget for this record. So I hired the same band basically, or Josh coordinated hiring the same band. So it's, you know, it's like really great musicians who full of ideas, who can really play. And it's just like, man, it was just like, I was thrilled doing it. So yeah, Josh did all that coordinating. But as far as like Karen O, yeah, like, and Matt from the National, and they're just people that, you know, we did so much touring. I feel like we know the entire indie rock, all those people. So, it was a certain personality, I think, that would be willing to sing on some of my sort of funny songs. So I didn't ask everybody, but Matt is very funny, and I had a feeling he would want to do it. So he's done a couple, and I really want him to do more. And Karen, she did a couple on my first record, which is great. Because she's, you know, sweet and so funny, and it for some reason, it made total sense to me. And it worked out great.
Oh, for sure. It definitely captures, it's sort of I don't want to say childlike, but sort of innocent quality to it. Well, to put an idea in your ear, Walter, it'd be great to do a collaboration with you and Wayne Coyne from the Flaming Lips.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
Actually, it would be awesome.
Yeah, I have this song now that's going to be the first song of a new record, and I need it. It's a duet, and I'm currently in the reach-out mode. So we'll see what happens.
That'd be amazing. Hey, well, Walter, I really appreciate your time. You know, you mentioned Stewart. I do want to ask, again, I'm sorry for your loss. I know it was last year, Stewart passing away. I'm wondering if you wanted to share any memories of Stewart or things, you know, you've spent a lot of time with him, obviously, friends, band. Anything that you'd like to share about his life just to get it out there?
Well, I mean, you know, he was like my best friend growing up. From when I was 12 till about 25, which is some pretty important years in one's life. We were like, you know, inseparable. So we did music together. We learned about all music together. We developed our tastes together. We, you know, it was very much our dream to do to do music. So I probably would have had the nerve, but he was like, we should just do music full time. And I was like, you're fucking crazy. And he was like, let's just do it. So I was like, all right. So so we did it. So I'm very thankful that he, you know, sort of tricked me into becoming a professional musician. But yeah, you know, it's just, it was hard, you know, it's like, it's a tricky thing. You know, he was, he struggled with addiction and with mental illness, you know, and those two things are very, very powerful. And when you're young, you don't know, well, I didn't know what's what, you know, and I didn't. And so it's so hard to navigate, you know, and I feel like it's something that people know so little about. And, you know, and most people don't know, but he was schizophrenic, you know, and that wasn't clear until the last few years of his life. And he didn't die of drugs. He died really of schizophrenia, and he died of suicide, which is, you know, which is, he's, you know, I think everybody everybody has a very, early, it seems like people who knew him have a very different understanding of suicide and of schizophrenia and things like that now. So yeah, you know, it's just a tragic story and a huge loss to a lot of people.
Yeah, again, sorry for your loss with that. But I do want to say, I mean, just like your own music, the music that you made with him, I think will live forever. And I think inspired, you know, so many articles I've read over the years, this, what you did with John the Fire Eater, like inspiring people. So there's definitely a legacy there. So
I hope so, yeah. And we're releasing I'm coordinating with his parents and a couple of friends. And he wrote this, what Stewart was really incredible at was writing poems. And it's very, it doesn't have anything to do with rock and roll or anything to do with Jonathan Fire Eater or anything to do with any of that kind of stuff. I'm always very hesitant to when I hear about a rock and roller who's also a poet. But in this case, at least, it is very different thing in my mind, and I think in his mind. So anyway, we're going to release a book of his poems that he wrote, all I think sort of post rock and roll period, that are, you know, they're like, it's like some of the most beautiful and incredible stuff I've ever read. So I look forward to people being able to read that stuff.
Well, that's a really beautiful thing. Looking forward to that. So again, you have two daughters. Do they play instruments? Are you inspiring them to be musical as well?
No, they take piano lessons. My oldest, who's in first grade, takes piano lessons. I'm kind of scared of the idea of my oldest one, Louise, she started dressing kind of like, she wears like jean jackets and stuff like that. And it feels like she's trying to look cool and kind of rock and roll. And I realize, it makes me realize that I just have this total aversion to that. I was just like, no. And she, yeah, I've tried to make her not aware of the fact that I used to be in a rock band. But now she knows, and I think she thinks it's cool. And for some reason it bothers me. So I'd rather her think that I just spent my whole life writing sort of funny songs, that like the kind of stuff I do now. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see if she may Google you one day and search and say, oh my gosh, there's Dad. What? Hold on, double click.
right.
Hey, Walter, well, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for sharing, you know, having this conversation with you. Looking forward to new music, looking forward to the soundtrack. That's really cool. I'm sure it's opening so many more doors. You know, had a pleasure chatting with you, and just wanted to say thank you.
Cool, yeah, thank you.